Today's show is sponsored by Public.com. That's where you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. While we can't say for certain it's the highest interest rate there is, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, a higher rate than Betterment, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So, if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty damn up there. This is a paid endorsement for Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosures/high-yield-account.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher-level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.
As part of our special coverage on this Super Tuesday, we turn now to Jim Gilmore, the former chair of the Republican National Committee, former governor of Virginia. It's good to see you, sir. Welcome back to Bloomberg. You were recently calling for unity in the party following a string of early victories for Donald Trump. That has been affirmed repeatedly with more than 10 victories tonight in favor of the former president. Is it time for Nikki Haley to drop out?
Well, yes, it is. It's a little late for her to be dropping out, to tell you the truth. I gathered together about 12 leading conservatives in the country and sent Nikki a letter in the early part of February, right after the South Carolina primary, and said, look, you didn't win your home state. You've lost all the primaries up to this point, all the caucuses. Get out and support the president and let's unify the party and get about the serious business of defeating President Biden. That has to be our goal now of the entire Republican Party. And by staying in and just attacking Trump the way she has personally, I think that she's probably missed her best opportunity to get out. But still, she still should. And we should unify the party. It's a serious business.
Well, sir, you speak of unifying the Republican Party. Certainly you use that language in that letter addressed to Ms. Haley. And yet when you look at the vote tallies coming in, granted, the votes have not been complete across any of these Super Tuesday states, but she currently has 47% in Vermont. In Virginia, where you served as governor, 34.6%. Yes, the state was called for Trump, but she is pulling in a relatively significant share of voters. Can the Republican Party, that divided, actually be unified in time for a general election in November?
Oh, I think the party can unify in time for a general election. Look, these are landslide numbers. Let's be honest with each other here. This is a really landslide election that we're seeing tonight. And frankly, it's been a landslide up to this point. My home state of Virginia, there are a lot of people, different kinds of attitudes of the people in Virginia. I served as governor of this state, but Trump is carrying the state tonight 2-1, almost 2-1. And that's dramatic. And then many of the other states are sometimes 3 and 4 to 1. This is a landslide primary victory tonight. So the point is this. This is an opportunity for Nikki Haley to get out and say, look, the time has come for us to unify the people who have been supporting me. That's an honest thing to do. Everybody that runs an election is going to get vote. The time has come to really get out there and talk about the serious business of changing the country, of really addressing the issue on the border, of really addressing crime in the streets, of really addressing this problem of inflation, which President Biden created. Let's face it, at the beginning of his administration, he created this inflation. He did it deliberately. But the problem is that working men and women in this country are suffering because of this. It's costing so much money now to have the necessities of life.
Aftermath of COVID, Governor, we don't really have a way to confirm he intentionally caused inflation here at Bloomberg. But most recently, you were with us to talk about your passion to fund our ally in Ukraine, at war right now with Russia. If Donald Trump is the next president, a lot of folks think that money might not be coming. Is that a worry of yours?
Well, let me say this. You know, and everybody else knows, that I am a strong supporter of Ukraine. I believe the Russian aggression is a serious global issue and has to be addressed. But when I was ambassador to OSCE in Vienna on behalf of the United States, that was the time when President Trump actually gave Javelin weapons to the Ukrainians so that they could resist the Russian onslaught. He never really told me or anybody around me to back up from the Russians. We were taking a very strong message there. So the point is that I believe that the track record for President Trump has been strong on foreign policy. And certainly if I'm in a position to advise him, I would advise him of the importance of Ukrainian support.
Sir, are you hoping you would be in a position to advise him in a second administration? Would you seek a job?
Well, I'd seek to have an opportunity to offer him the best counsel that I can. It's up to the president as to what he wants to do. But I, on my part, feel strongly about this issue and about the other issues as well. And, you know, I beg to differ with you on inflation. I've observed all those big, big spending programs that President Biden was putting in place at the beginning of the administration. And I knew, just like you did, that it was inevitably going to cause inflation. And we got inflation. The interesting question is the impact that it has on working men and women. This is now a populist campaign, which really means that he's concerned about people living paycheck to paycheck, people who are trying to make ends meet, trying to pay tuitions, trying to pay gas, trying to pay groceries. This is a campaign and a candidate who addresses and speaks to those issues.
All right, Jim Gilmore, former chairman of the Republican National Committee, former governor of Virginia, thank you so much for joining us.
Joining us now is Celinda Lake, the president of Lake Research Partners, for her take on what we've learned this evening. It's great to see you on Super Tuesday.
Thanks
for
putting us on the dance card here. Thank you.
Here is the story tonight that the pollsters were right.
I'd love that to be the story.
You never hear that.
We're
right?
Never. No one ever says that. I'm coming back every night with you guys. No, I think the story is the same story it was like 6 months ago. Joe Biden is going to be the nominee of the Democrats, and Donald Trump is going to be the nominee of the Republicans.
Fair enough.
Okay, fair enough. And Nikki Haley perhaps was a factor only on the margins and may not be a factor after this evening, depending on what decisions she
makes. Well, we hope she stays in.
How likely is that, though, in your mind?
I think it depends on her donors. And I think I would assume that there's an awful lot of pressure for her to get out if she doesn't win anything tonight. But, you know, it depends on her donors. That's when candidates get out, when they run out of money.
Yeah, of course. There's a special group out there, 17%. Who dislike both candidates. To be honest with you, I'm surprised on some days that number is so small, considering the conversation we're having in America right now about age, about divisiveness. What do they do? Stay home?
It's a really great question. And in some of the polls, it's as high as 20-21%. It's record high number for this early in the game. By the end of the campaign, there's often a number of voters, but this is a record high number this early. Many of them are contemplating third party. And when you push them, they'd really like a different set of choices. But when you push them right now, they go for Joe Biden, and they have pretty consistently. That's good news for us, because in 2016, they surged for Donald Trump. So it's a very different election this time.
Well, so when we're looking at some of the figures in these Republican primary states in which Nikki Haley, while yes, is losing to Donald Trump, she's polling pretty consistently right now, knowing the full figures aren't in, 20-30%.
Yeah.
How many Nikki Haley voters could become Joe Biden voters? Is there an overlap in the Venn diagram of those double haters and the people who are voting for Nikki Haley?
There is an overlap, but it's hard because they hate Joe Biden so much. So I think it's more likely they'd be third party. There's also a lot of voters considering skipping the race, not skipping voting, but skipping the race.
So vote down the ballot, just on top.
Yeah, and that's interesting because we've only had like 3% of the voters that do that normally. And usually the presidential brings people in, but now the presidential is discouraging people.
How about that? So tell us about the sample. We keep hearing the sample's broken. People lie to pollsters. They don't answer the damn phone anymore. You have to get them online. How do you get an accurate number in this world?
Well, it's really hard. And can you tell all your viewers to please pick up the phone, yourselves included?
The phone.
If it says Lake Research Polls, please
that's
pick
that
it up.
Ball, yeah.
But you call them back time and time again. You offer them multiple ways to respond, online, telephone. text. And you also, you try to, like, we introduce ourselves by saying we're not selling anything. We're not going to ask you for a contribution. Because people like to give their opinions, but they just don't want to be hammered to change their utility company.
Is that
company.
The first word out of your mouth? I'm not selling you anything. Is that right?
And I am not a liar. Yeah.
Maybe we can learn from this, Kate.
Yeah, this is how the sausage is made, the sausage being political polls in the United States. You mentioned a few times now, though, Celinda, this idea of people maybe going to a third party. If they don't like this general election matchup between Democrats and Republicans, you look for option C, whatever option C is. Utah just closed at the top of this hour at 10 p.m. Eastern. RFK Jr. was on the ballot in Utah. He's struggled to get on other ballots, though. How real of a factor is he in this contest?
Well, the interesting thing is, first of all, he's not on the ballot in very many places, but he is on the ballot in a couple of swing states. It's also RFK is being misunderstood for his father. You probably saw the poll by Echelon where half of the voters identified his father's picture for him. And what's interesting is if you get to know him, you don't like him. But that name is very formidable on the Democratic side. And all of the third parties pull from the Democrats. It pulls from Joe Biden. And this is the important piece, that third parties can't win, but they can be spoilers, and they can elect Donald Trump.
It sounds to me like Democrats need to run a clarifying campaign on this. I'm being serious. This isn't your father's Kennedy.
Well, they actually have in the free press, and people are quite surprised when they hear that he's a anti-vaxxer, when they hear that he has a mixed record on abortion. They think of him as a Kennedy and environmentalist, so what could be wrong with that?
Sure.
Well, you bring up abortion. Mm-hmm. Of course, in the last election cycle, the midterm cycle in 2022, we saw that issue as really being a turnout driver and, in fact, a disruptor in the elections. Democrats performed significantly better than was expected going in. Is that going to be the same kind of force in 2024? Does it have the same galvanizing effect that much further down the road from the Dobbs decision, the overturning of Roe v.
Wade? Well, this is the gift that keeps on giving. So there were some voters who thought, well, they're done, it's over, until the IVF decision. And then the Supreme Court in Alabama. And then the Supreme Court decision that's coming down about jailing providers in Idaho. And then the Supreme Court decision that comes down about medication abortion, mifepristone. And what voters have concluded is they're not done yet. They really mean it. They really want a national ban. And there are a number of states that have initiatives on the ballot. And we haven't lost an initiative yet. We saw the surge and turnout in Ohio on campuses and young people. So, yes, this is a very key strategic element of the 2024 elections.
So often we have Celinda Lake at the table here. Do a little quick math with us. Trump campaign says he's presumptive nominee likely by March 19th, maybe even the 12th, after running the table like this tonight.
Yeah.
It's the earlier date in your view?
I think so. And honestly, I think he's the nominee today. I think he was the nominee last month. And Joe Biden is our nominee, in case there was any question about that.
I just want to follow up on your point, though, about young voters. You mentioned how the abortion issue drives them out. But we also saw in Michigan, young voters in the college towns, Ann Arbor and East Lansing, more of them voting uncommitted because young people also have a problem with the president's stance on Israel, given what's happening to Palestinian life in Gaza. How concerned are you about the uncommitted movement, or more just what it means?
I'm very concerned about it. I'm very concerned about the division among young voters, because that was part of our secret sauce, not just for this election, but for the long term. But I will say this. They're not going to vote for Donald Trump. They might vote for third party. Right. They could not show up. They could skip the presidential. They could vote for third party. The president and the vice president are taking lots of actions around abortion, around student loans. I hope and pray that we have a ceasefire before Ramadan. And all of those would be important. But young voters are very divided, and it's very, very serious concern for our party.
We're waiting for results in Utah. Just to reset, if you're joining us late here, as part of our special coverage on Bloomberg TV and radio, Donald Trump winning 11 of 15 states. It's been a sweep so far, Kaylee. I know that you've got your eyes on Vermont here, and that could swing back into Nikki Haley's favor here. But this is pretty remarkable. Joe Biden now also winning the Democratic presidential primary in Utah. And we should have mentioned, if we didn't already, Minnesota came in. For Joe Biden, Kaylee, we'll be looking at the results a little more carefully to get back to what you were talking about and the series of uncommitted protest campaigns in states like Minnesota, much like we saw in Michigan, might give us a sense of what to look for in the general.
Yeah, or what to look forward to in the State of the Union as Biden tries That's to right. message around those issues. So, Linda, it's worth noting that Super Tuesday is today. 48 hours from now, Joe and I will still be here in studio on another long day because the president will be addressing the nation, perhaps the biggest speech he can give in this election cycle, aside from the convention. What is the number one thing he needs to message in that speech?
I think there are three things that he needs to do. One, he needs to set up the contrast, and he's really fighting mad and prepared to do that. Number two, he needs to address the economy and inflation, and I think you're going to hear him be very, very aggressive about price gouging and rising prices and the actions they're going to take and they have taken. And then the third thing is he has to paint the picture of what four more years of Joe Biden will be and what the hell that four more years of Donald Trump could be.
All right, so Linda Lake, great to have you with us in our D.C. studios this evening. Really appreciate you joining us, Linda Lake, Lake Research Partners president and pollster. Now we want to get some final thoughts from our political panel, Rick Davis, partner at Stonecourt Capital, and Jeannie Shanzano, political science professor at Iona University, as we wrap up our Super Tuesday programming here on Bloomberg Television and Radio. Jeannie, first to you, what really did we learn tonight?
I think we learned that Joe Biden has a task ahead of him with this unusual setup of Super Tuesday and then 2 days later, the State of the Union. And his task is big. That may be why he didn't come out tonight and speak publicly. And it is to tell the American public not only what he's done, but what he is going to do. And, you know, he is facing really bad poll numbers over the last weekend. So he's got his work cut out for him. But he has the race that he wanted, and so does Donald Trump. They both wanted to face each other again. Even if we don't want it, that's what they want, and they're going
to
get it.
Hate to be the wet blanket here, but I'm always glad to play that role. We said in New Hampshire, it was a late night there, Rick. We said this would be the beginning of the general election. Here we are saying it again. Did we just waste all that time?
No, it's not wasted. I mean, it was interesting, and we got to see a little bit of fighting. But there's no question this was Donald Trump's night. Not only was it Donald Trump's night because he collected the delegates he needs, he'll finish it off next week, but the reality is that both of his opponents, Nikki Haley and Joe Biden, gave him the night. It was his night to talk, and nobody else did. So as Jeannie said, Biden's got a job to do on Thursday. That'll be his night to talk, and that will signify the real cutting of the ribbon and off to the general election. This is the moment that voters are going to be looking in to see what the candidates were saying. They'll see Donald Trump in the news tomorrow, the victor, and they'll wait to see, I guess, from Joe Biden on Thursday.
Absolutely. And, of course, Rick and Jeannie will be with us on Thursday for that coverage of State of the Union. And come Thursday, we don't know whether or not Nikki Haley will still be in this race. We have about 90 seconds left with you two. If you had to put odds by the next time we see you on Thursday, on State of the Union night, as to whether or not Nikki Haley will still be in the running, Jeannie, would you take that bet?
Oh, I have no idea. I think it depends on the donors. I mean, I think in this case, you really do have to do what Bloomberg does best. Follow the money, because she doesn't get out because she's not going to win. She gets out because she doesn't have the money to go forward. So I think it's all up to her donors.
What do you think, Rick?
Yeah, I think that quiet is telling us everything. There'll be no more campaign that has any legitimacy. And if she does, it's only a matter of time before she gets out. And then the question is, does she endorse Donald Trump or not?
That's spoken from somebody who's been there and had those hard conversations. Mm-hmm. We'll, of course, keep you posted on whatever we're hearing from Nikki Haley's campaign. Our thanks to Rick Davis and Jeannie Shanzano. That does it for us here for now in Washington.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.